Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is August 25th, 2016, and today, and we're going to talk about, we'll answer your questions and share any of your successes. That was wonderful to call me at last time with sharing success stories as well, and so today we're going to talk about the, you know, forming a coaching, you know, how to do your coaching program. Each of you, it could be a little bit different with each person. And also, I just wanted to, because this big issue with Ryan Lochte came up with the swimmer that's kind of become international news, I just wanted to discuss that a little bit and what its implications are, or what your reactions were to it, and what maybe athletes could learn from that, because it is a big blunder, a big story. And happy to most important thing is to share your progress too, and any successes that you have. So first, let's see. We've got Evan and Jeff. Either one of you want to share anything that any progress or success stories this week? I know we had so many good things last time too. And also that our calls are, you know, the second and fourth Thursday of the month. So the next one, if you want to put on your calendar, would be the 8th, September 8th, and then September 22nd will be the two in coming up in September. So that's great. So Jeff or Evan, I don't know if you have anything to share. Or...
Yeah, Dr. Joanne, I don't know if I, last week if I spoke, I have an opportunity to move into a health club and
an
work
office?
With,
I mean,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they just out of the blue, somebody got my name, and the general manager came up and said, I want to talk to you. And so I said, sure, you know, and they said, we'd like to see if we can incorporate what you do within the health club. And I, you know, had been working outside, you know, just in my home office, and they said, maybe we can work some things where it'll be a partnership, and you do certain things for us, and we'll let you build your clientele off of our members.
Great.
And, it didn't take me long to say yes, even though I, gave it a couple days. But I just...
you don't want to sound too eager, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
great. So go ahead. What were you thinking there?
Well, I'm looking at, I'm excited for today a little bit, just because specific programs is what I'm trying to, you know, to look at and how to build them. I, you know, I've got ideas, of course, but I thought maybe your expertise, you know, as within the, you know, the health club, a little different than what I've been doing with high school students and just, you know, speaking, this is they're looking at, you know, obviously retention is something that they want people here more often. But it's a big site, you know, they have 7,500 members.
Wow.
And it's a nice health club too.
So if it's a nice health club with then hopefully people have extra income too.
Yeah, it's got a big tennis center and a pool and a bunch of free classes and, you know, full court basketball, free weights. It's really nice. And I just looking at, you know, different ideas for, I've got some that I talked to the general manager about, and she's like, man, that sounds awesome.
You want to share your thoughts so far, what you were thinking?
One of the things, I'm going to call it a mental detox program.
Mental detox. I love that.
Yeah. I just think, and I'm actually at the health club right now, so I'm just, you know, kind of watching people walk in and out, and you can tell how a person, usually how their workout's going to go just by the way they walk through the door.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so I thought, well, maybe if we could get them in a better mental state before they you know, come in, or right when they come in, you know, try to leave all that baggage, you know, at their car or something, and have them, you know, try to be a different person when they walk through the door. That's, you know, one of the things that I'm just trying to get all the negative stuff. I think people don't realize how hard they are on themselves and how negative they can become when they walk in the door. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's one of my ideas.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Because often, well, it's true with any workout that in general people or practice, whether it's at school or gym or at home, or people, you know, the first part of the workout is usually, yeah, like you say, mental detoxing and thinking about the argument they just had with someone before that, or the list of things they have to do afterward, or just a lot of mental baggage, yeah, that goes on. And then after, you know, maybe halfway into the workout, they're, you know, finally focusing on the workout itself. So, yeah, in the case of if they're trying to learn something new or do something intensely, half the workout can be lost just by, not their mind not really being there. So, yeah, that's true for any person. So if you can, we could do offer a visualization type thing that people could listen to. And you could also have, would you have an office there where you could meet with people?
I actually would have one right here, which would be awesome because of the traffic flow. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, would you?
Probably have 500 people walking through the door every day or more.
Yeah. Do you have to rent it, or would they give that to you free?
Well, what it looks like is it's kind of a partnership, and if I do certain things, they'll work on my rent. I'll first have to rent it, you know, and then I can build. But if I start partnering, then they'll take dollars off my rent. So it actually could become very, very inexpensive or non-existent if I do. And one of the things they want me to do is when a new member signs up, do a consultation, a free consultation with new members.
Yeah. So that could be like call it free consultation, but it's really also an assessment, of course, when you see someone the first time. Assess their, now are you skilled in also assessing them in terms of physical workout, or were you thinking mental assessment or both?
Well, I have my bachelor's is in kinesiology, but they're looking strictly mental. They want me to come, you know, and one of the things that I'm guaranteeing that this place doesn't do is, I mean, just number one, what kind of goals are you setting? You know, I mean, that's kind of a mental strategy, and that's one of the things, because, you know, so many people walk through the door without having a goal in mind. You know, it's like, well, I'm heavy, I need to get in shape, and that's about it.
Yeah,
so maybe
weight,
that's
kind of thing.
So that's one of the things that I want to, you know, work on is if maybe sit down and have to set goals. It's just you know, little key, because I'm not sure if they do it now. You know, she told me that.
Well, go ahead, sorry.
She told me there are 40 to 60 new people a month.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. You could offer something that no other gym has, or I don't know your area, but most people don't offer any kind of mental training at all in any gyms. And this is a good thing that you're saying here, because it's just a good thing for, well, Evan, you're on the call, and then other people, you know, listening to it, everyone has a gym in their town, kind of thing, and so it's something that everyone can apply, and if you can give them something that no one else is offering, then it sets their gym apart for sure. So you could can't find out what kind of shape, of course, I'm sure you know what shape they're in now. A lot of people have unrealistic goals, right? Of
yeah.
You want to be lose 100 pounds in the next 4 months. That kind of thing, which is not healthy, of course. and people try to do too much too soon, or there's always the January, it's a little early now, but holidays come up, and then people, overeat, and then January, they think, I've got to get, they see all these people at the gym for the first 3 weeks of January, right? Makeup for the holidays. Okay, I'm really going to do my New Year's resolution this year. And so it's good to think what kind of shape people are in, and then something slow, that general rule of don't increase your workouts by more than 10% per week or that kind of thing. And since you've got your BA in kinesiology, I'm sure you know that kind of thing, but it's that motivation kind of thing, keeping the motivation going, right?
Yeah.
So,
and that's an important part, because a lot of people, I sold memberships when I was in college at a health club, and, they're motivated for 4 days, and then they're done.
Yeah.
That's another piece.
Yeah, they work out and then get sore.
Yeah, and it's like, this is supposed to make me feel better, not worse, because they go at it so hard, it's so fast.
Yeah, do they have a pool there at all? Swimming pool?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So that's one thing that you could suggest for people at first. Even if they can't swim, they could do pool running, in the deep end of the pool, because that's usually less injury prone kind of thing. But there are some suggestions in terms of types of programs you could do is, you could do a seminar, one seminar for, just getting people interested in a whole mental area where you just cover lots of things. You could cover different topics in the Your Performing Edge book or your version of that, different things that people could do to stay motivated. So that would be one thing. And then you could use that to have people sign up for a class, a mental training class, and you could have something for once a week, for a month or 2 months, 6 weeks or 8 week class kind of thing.
Yeah.
And have people pay for that, and find out what kind of structure they have for other programs. Is everything included in the membership there, or do they pay extra for certain classes? Personal trainers there, like most gyms have personal trainers where they pay for an extra session, right?
Right.
I belong to two different gyms, and they both of them do that. They pay for a session with personal trainer or weekly kind of thing for an extra $60 or $80 for that session or whatever the price structure is. So you could be like a mental personal trainer and have them pay for for you, for your sessions, and ask the other personal trainers there, if you find them, what their payment structure is. Some they charge a certain amount, and then the gym gets a certain percentage, and the personal trainer gets a certain percentage, kind of thing. Is that, I don't know if you've asked about that, but that's one thing.
And the cool thing is, so they approached me in two different ways. One was me working for them. And I said, I can't have you dictate my hours, because I've got so much stuff, other stuff going on.
Yeah.
That, and they said, well, then, what if you rent the place? And then we don't dictate your hours. You build your business, but it's a partnership where you do things for us and we do things for you, and you have, the ability.
Charge them money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they pay you directly.
So I pay the rent and everything else is mine.
Uh huh.
So.
Yeah, if you could get a low rent kind of thing, and then have be able to build your business, you could. That's a better deal, I think. If it's a,
and they have a physical therapist here on site too, and I've talked to him, and he's been here for almost 5 years, and he goes, "Man, it was the best thing that, you know, when are you going to have, you know, access to talk to 7,000 people?"
Yeah.
You know, it's a real nice niche for what you want to do. And I was thinking, man, that's, you know, that is pretty. And they said that they'll advertise for me, too. That's part of the deal, is that they're going to advertise on their website, on their Facebook page. And they've got over maybe close to 7,000 followers on their Facebook page. So
great.
I instantly
wow.
have, you know, that kind of right off the bat. And I think they're trying to do exactly what you said. They're trying to separate themselves from other gyms.
Uh-huh.
Where, it's, you know, they have a nutritionist here, they have a physical therapist, they have their trainers, and then they would have me on the mental side of stuff where, you know, most gyms, they don't do anything like that.
Right, yeah. So that's excellent. What a great opportunity. And is it a gym that you belong to anyway? Or is it you?
I've actually been here for, everybody knows me. I've been here for about 17 years, and I work out probably 6 days a week. I don't miss very often, and so they all know me.
Yeah. So
at least all the staff does.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. So you're not starting from scratch, but that people know you there. So that's even better than much better, and probably some of the members know you too. So
yeah,
and you could write articles. That's one really good way to you know, on their Facebook page or website kind of thing. You know, it could be little tidbits. You know, it's the regularity that's the important thing. So it doesn't have to be real long. You know, make it a. If you've got a lot of tips for mental training tips, make it short. You know, say give them one tip a week type thing.
You do.
So that they you don't give them all your tips all at once in one article, and then think, oh God, I got to write another article. Just write one article that's like 10 parts. You give them one tip a week type thing, and they get used to seeing your name and then how to contact you and your phone number and that type of thing, and find out make sure that you're with your contact information what information you give them to make sure that can be included in all your articles and that sort of thing. Yeah, because if you had to pay for that kind of advertising, you know, they probably would charge a lot. But if they're going to do that for free or complimentary, do they do that for others? Physical trainer and that sort of thing too.
Yeah. They actually hired a guy that does videos, and he's on contract with them, and he comes in once a week and does like a highlight on different people.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And so that would be, you know, and then if I wanted him to be more, then that would be out of my pocket. But just the stuff that they do. You know, I mean, they're hitting the physical trainers probably every 5 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, you're right. It would cost a chunk of change to have that, you know, hit 7,000 people.
Right. When it comes around to your turn to highlight you, it's better to, rather than just do a marketing kind of thing, sign up for Jeff, better to give them some useful information, because that's what people want to read. When they see, it's an advertisement, people kind of glaze over it, but if it's something useful, here's what you can do to stay motivated, or here's what you can do to keep yourself going, here's how to prevent injuries, or heal faster from injuries. So that that can really help. That's fantastic. Congratulations, Jeff.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's exciting news.
Yeah, so it'll be great to hear your progress as we go along here. And that's an example of, you know, kind of you're doing marketing in the course of your daily routine, you know, that's the easiest way to do marketing for your own services. Here you are at the gym going there regularly for 17 years. You don't have to go out of your way because you're going there anyway. and then making that part of your work and all. Incorporating it in so that you can get paid for what you do well.
Great. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Evan, are you there? Do you have or any comments or any?
No, that's interesting because I was thinking about this also. I'm going to the gym usually, a little bit less at the moment because I'm more running for the marathon. But I was thinking when I was at the gym about how to. To start and to propose my service in this kind of area. So I'll take note of this. I haven't really started yet because, you know, I went back to France and I had the kids so far. So I'm going, so I don't have any news to give right now, but I will start, you know, promoting myself or prospecting beginning of September. So preparing for everything, and then I'll go there to do that. So thanks for sharing this.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you could,
You know, one of the things, Evan, that I did is I know that some of the staff members, and one girl's been, you know, kind of struggling with her weight. And I said, let's sit down sometime and just talk. And man, she's the one that went to the general manager and said, you need to talk to him, you need to talk to him. And she just kind of kept in his ear. And the next thing I know, she's, you know, calling me into her office. Usually when I get called into an office, it was a principal.
No. Yeah. Oh, I'm in trouble now.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was thinking, man, what did I do? But
was almost saying, yeah, you need to get, let's get Jeff on board here.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the way it happened. I mean, I worked in it. I did it free. I wasn't looking. As a matter of fact, this wasn't even on my mind. She's a really nice lady, and I thought, you know, she did some things. You know, I think I could help her. And so, and then within, I got a text from her and said, we need to talk. And then they said they wanted to do a video of me and put it up. They have an inner television system. So there's different buildings. And so they play these videos throughout the day of, you know, people being interviewed and who's on staff and the trainers and all that stuff. And they wanted to put me on the videos.
Wow.
And that's where, and then, you know, the next thing I know, that's when the general manager called me in.
Wow, that's
so fantastic. So it all started for me, you know, kind of just doing something for free. But she saw the benefit. Because she, you know, she's yo-yoed. She's really struggled. But nobody's ever talked to her about her mind. It's either, you know, eat better or work out longer. You know, those were her two choices. And she goes, I can't, I have a full-time job, three kids. I can't work out longer. I work out really hard when I'm here. You know, you could feel the discouragement that she had in her voice. You know, it's like, she kind of felt hopeless. And that's when I said, well, have you ever thought about, you know, bringing your mind into this whole situation? You know, and she's like, gosh, I've never, you know, it's always eat less or eat different and work out more. That's the whole mentality. And I said, well, what if you, you know, did certain things? I said, what if you're just more present while you ate? I said, you know, in America, we're not very present when we eat. And so you don't enjoy your food, which maybe will make you eat more because you're not present. You just, you know, or busy and trying to, you know, and I said, so, you know, maybe just one more thing this week, try to sit down with your three kids and no television, no nothing, you know, and your husband and just have dinner together.
Yeah.
And eat it you know, slow and be present and enjoy the food. Don't feel about it as a guilty thing. Just enjoy it, you know.
So yeah. Simple kind
she's
of
always,
thought.
It's always been a guilt thing, you know. Everything that she loves, she can't have, you know, and that's not good either, because I've learned that when you can't have it, then it gives it more power, and
yeah,
eventually you're going to have it.
Yeah, also, there's research showing that maybe you're aware of, in terms of eating for everyone, that, you know, with the taste buds in the mouth, that the, you know, like, let's say you eat a piece of chocolate or chocolate cake or something, the first bite is always the best, of course. You know, our taste buds are very attuned. And the second bite is not as pretty good, but not as good as the first bite, because your taste buds are already taking it in. The third bite is not nearly as exciting as the first bite, and by the fourth bite or so, it's just eating. It's not your taste buds start. You don't get the pleasure that you did with the first bite. So in terms of if you educate people about that, that you don't need a huge piece of chocolate cake. The enjoyment is really in the first three bites or so. So why not have a small piece, have three bites?
I thought maybe that's what I'll call my program. The first bite is always the best.
Yeah, there you go. You can call it that. That's funny. Yeah. So
I have read a little bit about that. And, you know, and it's like we, in America, we're trained to just plow through the food. We don't even taste the first bite. I mean, it's, you know,
yeah. They're
just...
Right. People are on their phones or doing other things, and they don't enjoy it. Yeah. So might as well... go ahead.
I saw the other day a man with two kids. It looked like they were going to some sporting activity, and the two kids were eating in the car. He was walking and eating his chicken sandwich or hamburger, I don't know what it was, as he was trying to get those kids to, you know, wherever they needed to be. And I was like, man, he didn't even know he ate, you know, because he was just in such a rush thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's,
anyway.
Might as well enjoy the food. It's a great lesson there for all of us. I was also going to mention another model. I've worked with gyms before, and just in terms of being if you don't have access to an office at the gym, you can still you could do a program there, do a one-time seminar or a course a several week course you write articles for their newsletter, for their website, that sort of thing, and they could, gyms are happy to do that, to refer to you, so they've done that to me, refer members from their gym to myself outside, and then they just come to my own office here outside the gym, so that's another model to work with. If for some reason it doesn't work out at the gym, they don't have office space, or they want to charge a huge amount of rent or something, you can choose to do it at your own home, but still work with them there. Give out your cards, and they may be able to put your business cards. That's a really important thing, to put your business cards out front if there's a place for those. A lot of gyms have that. So,
yeah.
So that's great. Thank you for sharing that, Jeff. That's wonderful. And
sure.
We're going to keep up on your progress with that. I just wanted to mention the, because it's, you know, big in the news, the Ryan Lochte case that you may have all heard about. Are you both aware of it, or Jeff or Evan?
So
the lessons that we can learn from that in terms of athletes. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing for our whole country in the U.S. what happened with that. But I hadn't followed it really closely, but I've gotten more information the last couple of days that when he. And just for other people on the that may be listening to this that were not aware of it. It was that Ryan Lochte was a top swimmer, and he actually texted apparently earlier on. I don't know if you guys knew about this part, but he texted something that said or tweeted did a tweet that said, if there was no Michael Phelps, I would be the Michael Phelps of the world. I don't know if you guys ever read that.
Oh, no. I didn't know that.
If there were no Michael Phelps, I would be the Michael Phelps of the world. So I call that sort of the second place syndrome. thinking that, and that may be, when you think back, well, where does all this stuff come from? He's been second place all this time and thinking, I'm not getting enough attention. I'm not getting enough attention. Well, now he's getting plenty of attention for the wrong thing,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Kind of like a little kid acting out and saying, wanting their parents to, could I want more attention? let me just review real quickly for other people that might not be aware what happened. But he, of course, Ryan Lochte was on the relay team, got the gold medal, well-known swimmer, but not as well-known as Michael Phelps. And then he went out drinking to celebrate with the three other guys and then vandalized a bathroom because they couldn't get into the bathroom. And, I hit a picture, destroyed a picture on the wall, and then the police came and asked him to pay for the damages. And if he just paid for the damages and left, everything probably wouldn't have become national news. But then that would have been fine, paying for what you did, the wrongdoing. But instead, he apparently texted his mother and said, "We were robbed," that story, and then actually lied to his mother about that, and then she leaked it out to the. This is what I understand would happen anyway. She said to the news people, "Oh, my son was robbed," and then it became international news. And then he actually went on, the Today Show and told the, and kept they had to make up this elaborate story, and told Matt Lauer the whole. He kept the story going that he was robbed and down on the floor with the police, and they all were. But that wasn't true at all. And now, just yesterday, I guess he went on the Today Show again and told the whole and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I made that all up." So it really makes him look bad. Now we know that he's lost all his sponsorship, over $1 million of sponsorship. All the Speedo and Ralph Lauren and all the sponsors have dropped him, which I think is a kind of a lesson to other athletes, that there's consequences for. That kind of wrongdoing, and so I just wondered what for the both of you what your reaction is to what happened and what where that might and what you think was going on with Ryan Lochte. If you guys have any comments on that, maybe Evan or Jeff.
Go ahead, Evan. Okay. For me, I was surprised, but we've seen we've seen many things like this. I mean, it reminds me of some French rugby player that in the World Cup in New Zealand had made up a story also to be aggressed, to be attacked, whereas he was just apparently drunk and hit a table in his room or something. And so that happens. For me, what is bad is, the making up of the story, not just assuming, that's not the word in English.
Not taking responsibility?
Yeah, exactly. Not taking responsibility. I mean, okay, you can do mistakes. They're still young. I don't defend what they did, but that can happen, but making this up and not taking responsibility, I think, for me is the most important. And on top of that, I read that Ryan Lochte seemed to have kind of flew away back to the U.S. as soon as possible, kind of leaving his mate there.
Right, exactly. That makes it look even worse.
Which is even worse. So
where the,
so, yeah,
the teammates had to pay $11,000, one guy for getting his passport back because they took that. Where Ryan Lochte got off scot free.
So I didn't really know that guy, and so now I don't have a positive image, you know, from that guy, and so that's what I think.
Yeah, and just that idea of the second place kind of thing, I think that that's something that a lot of athletes, suffer from. I mean, I went through that myself when I was second in the Hawaii Ironman Triathlon, many years ago. I thought I felt good about my achievement, but I didn't get any recognition at first. It was just, the first woman got all the news press and all the sponsorship and all the media coverage and all the race invitations to other places, and nobody was calling me. But I had to do the calling myself, and afterward to say, do all my own marketing and say, hey, I got second. Can I, be sponsored? And I think I could do really good things. And I had to really market hard myself to say, hey, there was a second place person, it was tough. I know what that's like to feel like you're second place and that the first guy is always getting the. But there's only the fact is, there's only one guy that can get first place, one person, and there's always going to be a second, third place, and that we have to, I think, teach our athletes how to believe in themselves and that give yourself, a gold medal or a recognition for what you've done, even though it wasn't quite first place or didn't quite measure up according to the, you don't get the external reward that you want, you can still use it. And I didn't plead sour grapes or say anything about the first person. I just, did my own marketing and ended up, here many years later, being able to, do well, get a PhD and be a licensed psychologist and have a successful business here. And over time, in some ways, second place can be a gift, can be the greatest gift you have because it makes you want to fight more, whereas first place can make more cocky. But I don't know, what do you think, Jeff? Did you have comments too?
Yeah, I feel the same. First of all, I was thinking, it's America, we're pretty forgiving, but then I hear people saying, well, they're young, and I'm like, this guy's almost 30.
Yeah.
I think he's 30 years old. He's like, that's not an excuse anymore, it's like. And then I'm thinking to myself, wouldn't you, I guess that I'm coming because I'm older, and, obviously I've never been put in that type of position, but it's like, why would you, and he's all blaming it on because he is drunk, but my point is why would you get that drunk?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you have somebody around, smacking you in the head and saying, don't do that?
Yeah.
He could have paid me, he could have paid me $100,000 for the Olympics to smack him in the head, and it still would have been a lot less money than what he's losing now.
Yeah, exactly. That's why people need us performance coaches like us.
Yeah, you're right. And it's like, and I understand, you're celebrating, you're having fun, that kind of stuff, but it gets to the point where it's like, holy mackerel, man, you got to, everything that you've worked for is really down the tubes right now.
Yeah.
I think he won. He's won like 12 gold medals.
Yeah, no one's going to remember that part. He's probably, saying, hey, but my gold medals, look what I've done. But for the rest of his life, this is what he'll be known for, the end of life. Vandalizing a bathroom and then lying about it and making a big story and getting out of town.
And then who's the guy that's counseling him? It's like, tell the truth. Just tell him the truth right now.
Yeah.
And you keep lying about it. It's just going to make it worse and worse. And it did, because didn't he have another interview with Matt Lauer where he actually had to tell the truth?
Yeah, just recently, a couple days ago.
Yeah.
So when you look at those two different, now of course everything's online permanently, so people look at those two different interviews and he's like, I didn't do it, I you know, I really
yeah.
robbed. And then the next
yeah.
interview saying, okay, well, sorry about that, I did, we screwed up.
Yeah, and he wasn't drunk on either one of those interviews, so he can't use that for an excuse either.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, I don't know, you know, you look at, there's a lot of people out there that are just morally bankrupt. They just, you know, they'll do anything they can to, you know, to try to get out of it, or, you know, where they just really could just stand up and say, man, I really screwed up, and, you know, I hope I can, you know, do something to make up for it. But, you know, that took so much coaxing from other people.
Yeah. So let me ask you both if he was now, if he was your client, and you came to, or, you know, you're sitting down with Ryan Lochte and starting to work with him in rehab, he's saying, I need
yeah.
to go to rehab now. But it's probably,
yeah.
it's probably, you know, he's just saying that to sound good. But if you were to work with him, what kinds of things would you tell him or have him work on, do you think? Now, Evan, what do you think?
I think I would try to understand where it comes from. You mentioned the second place syndrome, so trying to work on that just to understand and become aware of what drove him to do that. Both the destruction of the toilet and everything, and lying. So that's what you do with coaching. So I would start with this, just to understand where it comes from, so that we can work on the source of it, and then, depending on the answers, trying to work on that.
yeah, exactly, and just because chances are it's a pattern. The lying, it didn't just happen this one time, it's something that may be a pattern in his life. That oftentimes it takes a while for someone to get. You know, to get to the source of that. So that's
yeah.
a good thing to, I think, focus on. And
I think one other thing I'd look at too is, like, you know, this thing with Michael Phelps. You got to figure all that mess out too.
You mean saying that, oh, yeah, Michael Phelps is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's like if he wasn't there, then I'd be Michael Phelps.
Yeah,
know?
Right.
And who knows, that could have been, you know, the dream. I could have been acting out from that. I don't, you know, you never know.
Yeah.
From him saying, he's saying, look, I've won 12 gold medals, and my name's not even mentioned, you know.
Yeah. And I can, you know, most athletes, you know, there's a lot of athletes that go through that, and it is tough, you know, to be, you know, the athlete that I worked with in Rio just now is a swimmer, and she's going through that, the sort of second place syndrome of not getting, you know, feeling like, she says, I just can't help it, but in a different way. She's not cocky like Ryan Lochte, but just saying I can't help but compare myself to other people, and I just worked just as hard as they did, but I don't get, you know, I don't get treated well or don't get that recognition, and I just want to do something special and that kind of thing, and feeling like you're not measuring up. So there's that part to work with. Yeah, but the fact that he said that and felt that and then tweeted it to the world, you know, that is a pretty powerful statement. If there wasn't a Michael Phelps, I would be the Michael Phelps of the world. That's pretty narcissistic, too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, man, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Just that.
Yeah, I think we need to teach athletes, you know, to not, that social media is so prevalent these days and people just, you know, think of something, every time they have a thought, they tweet it, you know, and just thinking that nobody will look at this or that it will be kind of private. But once you tweet something or put something on Facebook, if it's on your, you know, public page, it's you know, and then if you do get well known, or even you might get well known for the wrong thing. To get really careful about what you say. I think it's not wise to keep any kind of negative thoughts or anything that's really makes you look arrogant or bad to not put that on social media because it can come back to haunt you. I think it's a really important thing to teach athletes. You know, one athlete, I was contacted by CBS News I think it was the Winter Olympics in Sochi. One of the athletes tweeted something or put on Facebook a comment that was, complaining about the Olympic Committee or something in the Olympics and a really bad comment about that. And she was actually kicked off the team. She was in Russia, I think, kicked off the Russian team because of a Facebook comment. Pretty powerful. Yeah, just because of something that she wrote on Facebook. And then I got called by CBS to comment on that. And I said, if you have something negative to say about someone, say it face-to-face, not on Facebook.
which is a good
kind of soundbite that they liked. So it's really important to realize the possible consequences of the things you say can go viral. So I really appreciate your comments on that. I think the Ryan Lochte case can give us insights as to what's going on inside and realizing that something can get taken out of also the whole idea of the role model thing, that when you are a top athlete, whether you know it or not, you are a role model for other athletes for the world, and it's your choice whether. Well, sometimes it's not. Your behavior can make you a really bad role model.
It's good or bad, I guess, right?
You may not. If you do something that's kind of questionable, then, you know, it's out of your control at that point. Like with Ryan Lochte, the media loves the scandal, and they just take off on it. And so after that, it's out of your control. You become a worse and worse role model. it's important to realize that. And there's, you know, he didn't know. He probably figured, there's no cameras around. Nobody's going to see any of this. And the whole thing's on the surveillance camera. So realizing that these days there's cameras everywhere, we need to. A really important lesson is that it's not your, you know, it's not only important what you do on the track or in the pool. It's what you do off the track, off the field, out of the pool. That's just as important, and people look at that part, not only your performance. And so that's a whole different kind of athletes need to learn how to act when they're talking with the media or when they're with their other friends. And with the celebration, there's good and bad ways to celebrate.
I look at it and I just think, man, he's just destroyed every, you know, he's worked so hard for such a long time, and it's all gone now. It's the worst time of his life, too, when he's looking, you know, I mean, maybe he has one more Olympics, who knows, but you look at it and it's like, it's at the end of his career where he really wants that money to be coming in.
And he could have been a good role model. And you think he's complaining about, Michael Phelps is getting all the money. Well, he was getting $1 million or more of endorsements. That's not that bad.
That's not chump change.
And now he's lost all that. Plus, you know, just a reputation. So, and just thinking the value of your reputation over time is that, you know, you can work all your life for to build a good reputation, and then if you do something like this, all that can be lost in a moment. so you know, just realizing how important it is to build a good reputation and to keep building that and to value that and be grateful for what you do have, not have sour grapes about what you don't have. Right, and to realize the world is not fair. You know, if I was coaching Ryan Lochte too, I'd say the world is, you know, just, yeah, it's not fair. If you get first, you don't get a certain amount of money, and second, you get a certain amount. It's, you know, with sponsorship, it's all, in our country, it's all over the map. And it, like my client that I was working with in Rio, she said, well, there's Michael Phelps, and then there's everybody else as far as money goes. And that's just the way it is. You know, nobody else really makes big money in swimming, except now we know Michael Ryan Lochte did for. But most people don't make that much, and so you have to do it for get back to, you know, why are you really swimming or why are you working out? It's for the joy of the sport. I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's great. Evan, you have any other comments, Evan?
No.
That is good. Yeah, sorry we went on so long about this, but I think it's an important lesson since it's really hot in the news right now, and who knows what else will come out of it. I mean, it may be that, you know, they sanction him and he's not allowed to swim anymore, or not. I'm not sure what the status of that part is right now, but not allowed to, you know, compete in swimming. So that's not a good thing either, you know, not being able to do the basic thing that you started with, to swim. So, so I know we spent a lot of time on that. I just wanted to start on the coaching program part and just talking about, you know, I think it's good to have a sample coach or a coaching program. You know, just say that you offer, performance coaching or whatever you'd like to call it, mental training, you know, a program as opposed to just sessions. I think there's some background noise there. If you could, for this part, just put star six.
Yeah, it's me.
Okay, just push star six to mute your phone, and then we can get good, recording. That would be great. Thank you. And if you want to have a question, you can just press star six again to unmute, but just being able to have, market yourself, you know, with your program and not just individual coaching sessions. That way it looks, you know, you look more reputable and people like the idea of being in a program of some sort as opposed to just sessions. And then you can decide what that would be in terms of the structure of it. It could be a block of four sessions or a block of eight or 12 sessions. And you could, you know, decide what that might be. Or you could have a couple different choices. You could have a 2 to 3 month program or a 6 month program. Sometimes people like to start off with something a little bit shorter so that there's not as much commitment at first, and then they could go into a longer program. With individual sessions, once a week works really well, I've found. Although sometimes if someone has something coming up real soon, then they're really open to twice a week. For instance, I just had this person that was taking a test. Test-taking anxiety, which is, you know, different than sports, but it's the same kind of anxiety that goes on. And he was taking the bar exam, and so it was coming up real soon. So we did two sessions a week for 2 weeks. We started out with one session a week, and then we went to two sessions a week as it was getting closer to the bar exam. And then he took the exam and did well. It takes 6 weeks to find out, so we don't know the results yet. But then he felt so good about it. And then I got a call from his brother, who was taking an MBA exam or to get into an MBA program, and went through the same kind of thing. So sometimes that can happen to if there's more, something coming up, then you can do more than once a week. And I think it's better to do a block. The way I do it is a block of prepay for a block of four sessions first. and then say that so that you're paid for those four sessions, and then it can be flexible one or two times a week, and so as soon as the four sessions are finished, then they pay for another block of four sessions. That way it can be flexible, and if they need to meet twice a week, it's okay. If they miss a week, that's okay. You just keep track of the four sessions, and then when those four sessions are finished, then you can bill for a second four. That way, you know, if someone's not willing to do that, then you could make another arrangement to just pay for, say, do one session, an initial session that's more, a little bit more expensive than one session would be normally, because the first session you're doing a lot more work, and I usually spend more time with someone doing both assessment and treatment and the visualization. So, you know, for instance, I'll charge for a block of four sessions like $995. I have a higher price because I've, of course, been doing this for a long time, but $995 for four sessions. Or if they want to do just one session, then I'll do like a $297 for that first session only, so that we get a good assessment and all. So that's just an example. Or if you're doing maybe $100 per session, you could charge like $297 for three sessions. Seems to be a really good price that people are willing to pay. So you could start with something like that. So that's some information about the structure. And then I think with each session, you know, how to think about your coaching program. You know, you think about the sport, which sports you want to work in, and what your client population would look like, your ideal client population, and then what age group you're working with, if it's, you know, younger kids or high school or college or older adults. Think about those different age groups and what they would want. Like Jeff, you were talking about at a gym, it would probably be mostly adults, and they're used to paying a monthly fee for their membership at the gym, so they'd be willing to pay probably a monthly fee to you, or it could be four sessions kind of thing to you for your program there. And you could think in terms of what they're already paying for other things. I've found with parents, they're very willing to pay for their kids. They're used to paying for kids, you know, soccer lessons, swim lessons, school, private schools, all of that. So they're very willing to pay for your program as well. And they oftentimes, I have clients that don't, they just want to know the value. If you can really spend a lot of time on that first phone call talking about the value of your, of what you do. Oftentimes they don't even ask what the price is. They just say, okay, whatever it is, I'll pay for that. And so that, those are the best clients, of course, that you want to have. Have them prepay for that first part, those first four sessions if you can. Then they'll, then you don't have to worry about getting paid or paying each time. They don't have to think about pulling out their wallets. It's just all taken care of, and then you can get more done that way and really build more of a commitment. So, you know, writing down, I think it's good to write down, as you think about your coaching program, write notes for yourself. Each of the sessions, I would write down my own notes, my reflections about the client, the planning ahead. As I'm, if I'm here with a client, it's better to do my notes in writing, so I'm not on a computer or something. But you know, having face-to-face contact is really important, and I'll just look down every now and then and write notes. If I am on the phone with them doing a phone session, then I'll be, you know, have a headset, and I'm writing my notes on the computer. Because they don't see the computer, of course, and it's easier to talk with them, but just writing notes that way. And then writing your planning notes for the client, making some sort of a action plan at the end of the session for that client. So what's important about an action plan, I think, you know, is that you give the client a tool, you know, some kind of tools or tools to focus on during the week, an assignment to do, And I think that's really important because then they feel like they're in a structured program. It's not just therapy, but it's something that they are doing on a regular basis. And if they have homework to do each week, it's not just your session with them, but you give them something specific to do. And often I'll wait till the, you know, as the session evolves, then based on what they say during the session, then I'll make up the homework assignment based on what they say. You know, if it's a, if they're having trouble with, say, an injury, then, you know, we'll make do a visualization around injury and have them work on that and work with the physical, whatever the physical therapist is having them do so that they get over their injury quickly. If they have an important competition coming up, then we'll work on that and visualizing the competition, the specifics of that competition, what it is their coach wants them to work on. So we'll, you know, ask them about that. What are the cues that your coach wants to give you? And then I'll make an assignment around that that's complementary to what the coach is saying. And then, or if it's around motivation, like Jeff with your gym members, you know, you could do a visualization with that, with motivating them, or writing out a log book, having them log each of their sessions each day and what their goal is and then what they did, what they accomplished. That's a good way to build in motivation. So something around exactly, you know, specific to what they are bringing in that time. Better not to do just a canned, you know, general program, but you can have a general overall idea. One way to do it, too, is the book that you all have, your Performing Edge book. You can, you know, take chapters from there and go through one chapter one at a time or choose specific chapters, and you can make that your program and go over the topics in the book with them. And at the end of most of the chapters, at the end of your Performing Edge book, there's a mental training exercise in a gray box at the end of each of the chapters in the book, so you could have them do those assignments as one of the things to do. Or if they are have a specific question or situation, then you can pick out a chapter in the book that applies to that specific situation. So those are some things to think about with your coaching program and how to do an action plan and the structure of it. And then I want to just address what to include in your, you know, in the coaching offerings. You know, you've got your, you want to think about long-term goals, you know, what it is that they want to achieve overall, and let's say in the next 4, 8 weeks, or 3 months or 6 months. So those are the long-term goals, and then the short-term goals would be, of course, objectives, how to and you know, what to do each week. And then you've got your intervention or your action, specific details about what to do during the week. And then, you know, it's good to have some sort of progress record, like I mentioned, just logging your movement forward. So, for instance, if you're wanting a person to listen to one of your visualization exercises every day, then have just create a little logbook of, and I'll work on that this week to see if I can create just a little progress record for you to, you know, log the mental training, or if you want to create your own, that's fine too, to be able to log what they are doing. And so, or an exercise, you know, have them bring it back into you, like, you know, with the power words exercise. If they write their negative thoughts on the left and write their positive thoughts on the right, have them do that and bring it to you so you can see their progress, and then you can build another visualization around that. So it sort of each week builds on itself. When you do a visualization, you know, I just do the right-hand side, the positive power words, not including the left side, the negative words in a visualization. Of course, so they're always looking at the positive stuff. So there's that, and then, you know, maybe let's say they've done the first four sessions, and then you want to reevaluate, you know, what's their progress and what's the need for more sessions, or and usually they want to go on to do more sessions. So then you can set up, okay, what's the goal for the next four? And then you could have some, you know, to, one thing that's really important, I think, to do in a coaching program is ask them to write down, say, two or three questions for me for the next week. If they can come in to you with these questions and they really value your time and your expertise, then that's a really good thing to say. If I'm working with Sally, say, Sally, bring in you know, two or three questions for me that we can, you know, things that came up during the week, that your thoughts, your reflections, or things we can work on. And I know we did that with the my student that was working on the MBA test taking anxiety exam. He had loads of questions for me each week, and that way you could just dive right in. And he said, you know, I just feel like everything gets magnified, and I get worried about the, you know, being able to focus on the test, and so we'd work on that. So it was just lots of things that that we could work on. If they bring in those questions to you, then you've got that can become the structure for that session. And so, and then giving some, you know, always giving them some kind of exercise to do that's based on what they need. You know, I'll give you another example. Is I worked with an attorney, and he was having a hard time. He's a runner, but also working on just the anxiety of his job. So we're working on both, you know, the business performance anxiety and then also his running. And he would say that he, right before he goes to sleep, he just, you know, attorneys are always thinking about the, oh, my gosh, I've got this, you know, I've got this trial tomorrow, and what if he asks this, and how do I handle this question, and all this this stuff would come up in his mind, and he couldn't sleep. And so I said, well, how about if we do a brain dump? I call it a brain dump 1 hour before bedtime. So you write down all your thoughts and everything that you are coming up with, so you accelerate that process and do your brain dump and thought reflection before you go to bed. Write it all down on your computer or paper, whatever works for you, and so you're doing this an hour or 45 minutes before bedtime, and stuff will come up, and then you feel like you've got the majority of what your brain is, your mind is thinking, written down, and that can give you a sense of peace of mind. It's out of your brain and onto paper or on your computer, and also then when you go to bed, you know, of course, your mind continues to work on that stuff. An attorney's mind is probably always working on the next trial or the next case, so he can be working on that. You know, if you're thinking about that, then your subconscious mind continues to work on it through your sleep, but at least you get to sleep okay, and then you can have a restful sleep. So just that brain dump exercise, and that can be good for everyone, not just attorneys, to be able to let go of things. So that's an example of an exercise someone could do. An athlete could do the same thing, do a brain dump when they're worried about the race, the competition the next day. Think about what's going on. So and write things down. And then it's very reassuring to know that this is all. And then just be able to say to yourself, everything's going to turn out just fine. It's all being taken care of. And tomorrow's another day, and just be able to let go and to shift gears and to shut off the brain. And, of course, you know, one thing you probably know, but it's really important to, kids do this, and now even adults are doing it, taking their cell phones to bed, which is not a good idea at all. The bedroom should be sacred and should not have, make sure that they leave their cell phone, turn it off, and put it outside the room. Do not use the cell phone as an alarm clock. A lot of people do that, thinking, oh, my cell phone, I'll just wake up to that. But then, of course, they get texts in the middle of the night and calls, and they get woken up and interrupted, and their sleep is interrupted. So the cell phone does not belong in the bedroom at all. It's that needs to be a place just for sleeping, and have them leave the cell phone outside the room, and try to not have any screen time, you know, for a half hour, 45 minutes before bedtime, because that's going to keep them awake. So those are some suggestions, some ideas with the kinds of homework that you can do. So that's one thing we covered there is the sort of coaching program, the structure, and then how to think about your coaching program, what's important about an action plan and what to include in your coaching. And then next time I can give you a little more information about what to do in a, you know, sort of a written program that you would, a sample one that I would write out for a client. So, let me just ask for, so it's about, we need to wrap up here, and then our next call, and I just want to ask you guys if you have any questions about that, and our next call will be September the 8th, so if you can write that down on your calendars. So let me just open up the lines here, and Jeff and Evan and anyone, you can press *6 if you had muted your phone, you can press that to unmute. Anyone have questions or comments about that?
Yeah, no, thank you. That was a really good suggestion. I was just wondering, when you do a visualization in such a program, usually how long do they listen to the visualization, or do you change the visualization? Do they do one visualization for like a week and then you change to another goal for the visu, or can they listen to it for the whole program? Or it depends, I guess, on the needs, but...
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, what I do is I give them, I listen to what's going on in each session, and then based on the learning of that session or what it is, what the problem is that they're bringing to that session, we do a visualization based on that specific topic for that week, whatever we're talking about, and do a visualization with that, and then I say, okay, listen to this, for this week, the first week, and then as we continue on, I tell them that, you know, we're building a library of visualizations, and I tell them that this is, they love this idea of a playlist, because most athletes and people have are used to building playlists of music. So they'll put, you know, a whole playlist of songs that they like to listen to through iTunes or wherever they get their music. And so I tell them, so now you can build a new playlist of these visualizations, mental training playlist. And so each of these, you know, take a folder and put it under your playlist, you know, not music, but a different one, and have your mental training visualizations there. And then so each week we're building another one. So then you can, you know, some athletes might get bored, you know, just listening to the same thing every night. So after 2 weeks, they've got two visualizations, and after three, they've got a third visualization. So they're building, and after eight, they've got eight of them. So tell them it's like a menu, like going to the restaurant. You've got a choice. You can go to your menu and say, what do I need tonight, to visualize, so they can have one for their past peak performance, and have another one with power words, and another one for, say, an upcoming race or competition, and another one for a specific for building confidence, another one for handling negative thoughts. Whatever comes up for them, another one for handling pressure. So you could tell them, you know, you could give them those different topics, especially that's a great way to, with my marketing, that's what I tell people initially if they're interested in doing visual, these sessions. I say that we build a whole library of these visualizations so that they have all these different things, the standard ones, building confidence, pressure, handling negative thoughts, and they love that. So they can be able to have to just at the touch of a finger, just be able to have that, have me in their ear kind of thing, talking them through whatever situation might come up. And so they build this library that, so they have a visualization or mental training for anything that might come up for them. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, completely. Thank you.
Yeah. Good. And then they also say, I take requests, just like on the radio. If you after you've done several of them, too, just to ask the athlete, you know, I tell them, is there something specific that you'd like me to do a visualization on, and get their input. and then you can add that to maybe they have trouble sleeping, and so you can do one just on, you know, relaxation and not so much on the competition itself or something that just helps them to relax. You could do that and find out exactly what scene helps them to relax more. Do they like going to the beach or the mountains, or, you know, make it specific to them? So so that's really good too. So yeah, you've got a whole library of these. So then you can tell them that they can have a choice of listening to whichever one that they would like. Sometimes they'll like one visualization more than another. And then you want to ask them for feedback too, because it's kind of an interactive process. You're telling them or finding out from them which kind of visualizations do you like best, or which ones work better, and then you can do more of those based on what they've said. So you can improve your process based on what they want. Yeah. So good. It's really fun, I think, because you're really you're not just creating these general ones, but you're really focusing in on what each person needs. And for kids, I'd say in terms of length, you know, the younger the person is, the shorter you may want to make the visualization. So if it's just a 10 year old, I would make it just 5 minutes long, and if it's an adult, they may want something more 10 to 15 minutes long. So, because their attention span maybe take longer to relax and that kind of thing, whereas a smaller, younger kid wants to just kind of get right into it. So that's a good suggestion too, depending on age. So yeah, great. Thanks. I don't know, Jeff, are you still there? Do you have any questions or comments?
Yeah.